Welcome to the Easeful Uplevel, where we talk all things conscious entrepreneurship, spirituality, and upleveling without stress. Together, Aaron Tobias, our marketing expert, meets with Allison Borstad, our mindset expert, where we just get into the nitty-gritty of what it means to figure out who you are, what your purpose is, and what your next steps are. Our goal is to make it as effortless and easeful as possible, even when you're going through hard times. Our goal is to get our mindsets right and get our energy right so that we feel like we can attack anything, we can accomplish anything. Consider this your energetic upgrade of the day. We hope you love this episode. Welcome back, everyone. We are so excited to have one of our favorite people, Gretchen Stutz, on the podcast today. I met Gretchen a few years back, and I think we instantly kind of fell in friendship love in terms of just being on the same wavelength, even though we focus on different things. Gretchen is a dietitian, and she's going to introduce herself formally because I'll probably butcher it. But to me, she is the smartest person with anything that has to do with nutrition and how it affects our bodies. I personally have worked with her. I've sent my husband to her. I've sent clients to her. I send everybody to Gretchen. If they're having anything, you know, nutrition related that they need help with. And she is just such a well of knowledge and has a way of taking complicated things and making them easy for people like me. So without further ado, Gretchen, I would love to have you introduce yourself, who you are, what you do.
Yes. Well, let me just say, ladies, Aaron, Allison, I'm so happy to be here with you today. You are two of my favorite people. Allison, I love that you and I get to collaborate on the Rebirth program, which I'm sure I'll talk about. And Aaron, I'm so glad to know you for all of your marketing genius. You've helped me so much. And this space is so fun, ladies. You've created such a fun podcast space, and I am so sparklingly glad to be in it with my sparkling shirt on.
Yes, we love your sparkly shirt today, Gretchen. You're looking fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yes, as Allison said, my name is Gretchen Spetz, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I use a functional nutrition approach to help my clients get at the root causes, the diet and lifestyle root causes of what is an issue for them. And predominantly, I work with people, with women who want to lose weight, people who have IBS issues. And usually, somewhere in the middle of those two things, we're also talking about autoimmune diseases, and we might be talking about blood sugar dysregulation, diabetes, or other inflammatory issues. So even thinking along the lines of high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and other very common chronic diseases of our time. And I think it's so important to really think about the whole person when we are figuring out the best diet and lifestyle approaches for them. I think the thing that everybody pays a lot of lip service to, but it's often ignored when it comes down to how exactly are you supposed to manage it, is the stress of our modern world. So we all talk about even going to the doctor's office, and just fun fact, one of the number one reasons that women go into the doctor's office is complaining of fatigue. And there's always lip service paid to, oh, well, you got to reduce your stress. But that little sentence there, reduce your stress, I find so unhelpful because the question begs, where do we even begin? There's so many things that are stressing us out. We can look at physical stress. So I'm actually thinking, you know, as a dietitian, I'm always thinking food first. So we can think about the stress of our really poor food system. So a lot of our fruits and vegetables, we see in our current day a decrease in up to 50% of the micronutrient content that fruits and vegetables used to have when it was all chronicled by the USDA back in the 1940s or 50s. And so we're experiencing a lot of micronutrient depletion, so vitamins and minerals. That can be a major stress on the bottom. There's also on the body. There's also toxin exposure. Our world is full of toxins. So we've got personal care products that are making us exposed to endocrine disruptors, which are impairing how our bodies function on a hormone level. We are exposed to lots of microplastics and things like that. I don't think we fully understand how that impacts in stress on our bodies. Some of us do things like over-exercise and not eat enough. I see this a lot in the women that you were just talking about who may be listening to this podcast. So we always hear the message that you just got to eat less and exercise more. So why not go out and train for that marathon or go to CrossFit and not fuel appropriately? Yeah, that'll get me there. It does until it doesn't, ladies. And then we end up in a really depleted state. And then, of course, there's just so much noise. There's so much noise. A lot of us have a lot of responsibilities. Maybe that's taking care of older parents, taking care of young children. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's a combination of lots of caregiving responsibilities. There's also just emotional stress that I think we're finally just getting into a place where we're teaching our little ones how to become emotionally mature and handle emotions. And all of this builds up. And we can just be overstressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my experience.
Yeah.
Same girl, same.
Right? It's so funny too. I also think there's something to be said for, you know, as our body changes, even hormonally, right? Like as we get into our 30s and 40s, we're not working with exactly the same system we were working with in our teens and our 20s. At least I find that to be true. And then you also sometimes think about your life circumstances. I know a lot of things I felt like changed for me and my body after having two kids. I felt like hormonally things were different and my lifestyle was different. Like I didn't have the time that I had before and I had to readjust and rework all these things. So I always appreciate that. Like you, anytime I bring an issue to you or anyone that I've seen bring an issue to you, you're really helpful with finding like, let's actually pin down actual solutions and actual approaches to make it work with your lifestyle and with what's specifically going on for you. Cause I'm curious like how you feel about like in terms of, do we all need to be on the same plan, buy this thing or whatever? Or do we really need to be looking at specifically what's going on with us and tailor kind of our nutritional or lifestyle habits to what's going on with us specifically? I'm just curious your thoughts. Maybe it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some common tenets that we all share. So for instance, I think for many people, it's really important to pay attention to, are we eating to support regulated blood sugar? So whenever we eat anything, our blood sugar is going to go up, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's when we see big mountains and low valleys and lots of rises and falls that can contribute to some symptoms that are less than ideal. So it can contribute to inflammation. It can contribute to brain fog, feeling very fatigued, feeling just downright cranky. And whenever we're experiencing these sorts of things, we want to think about, man, what is happening with my blood sugar? Am I eating to support my blood sugar? And I think that most diets that are super sustainable and helpful for many people do this to some extent. I also think this is where the individuality comes in. Everybody is in relationship with food. We are a special kind of animal. We're one of only three, if I recall correctly, animals that don't just eat to live. So we live to eat, right? We enjoy eating. So much of our community is based, our community life is based around food, right? So we're also in this relationship with food, and we have certain likes and dislikes and cultural foods and things like that that should be honored, respected, and also explored.
I love this conversation around that you're bringing up for us about the individualized approach and the need to kind of like examine what your body's doing, especially as we are coming to this stage of life where we may, number one, be experiencing just changes due to having children and, you know, getting to a place where our hormones are naturally going into a new shift, a new way of being. But also, we may have been riding high on a bunch of stress in our 20s that we didn't realize that we were experiencing. And now, after so many years of being in that chronic stress state, now we find ourselves like in a place where we might not be able to continue in that, like in that way.
Yes. And stress, you know, degrades our body's ability to work. Your adrenals, which makes many of your stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline, you know, demand a lot of nutrient power. So if you don't have enough coming in, like vitamin C, for instance, we always think about vitamin C as being a big nutrient for our immune system, and it is, but it's also really important for our adrenal glands. You don't have enough coming in because you're so focused on, you know, drinking your pre-made shake for 2 out of 3 meals, then you're really not equipped to handle the high level of stress. And that will start to affect your body overall and how it works. So, you know, you asked about a individualized, should everyone be on the same diet? And I said, you know, we should think about blood sugar as a commonality, but and we should think about maybe certain foods that contribute to inflammation that can look different from person to person. But I think what's so important is making sure we're getting enough. We're getting enough volume and we're getting enough variety. Because when we don't get enough volume of food, yes, and I know, you know, some people are like, well, I'm doing that on purpose. I'm trying to lose weight. But what happens when you do that for too long? Then all of a sudden you get so hungry. Or, you know, the food when you dine out looks so good and you just overdo it and you end up in this pattern where you're just up and down in regards to calories, where if we could find like a good sustainable amount that you should be getting, oh my gosh, you'd be so much – you'd feel so much more supplied and nourished all the time. And then variety, if you're only eating broccoli and green beans, quality vegetables, but we get so much benefit – from including a wide variety of foods. As a matter of fact, the American Gut Project shows us in their research that if you get 30 or more plant foods in a week, that's excluding oils, my friends, but everything else. So it can be grains, it can be fruits, veggies, seeds, nuts, all that stuff. But 30 or more means that you are most likely to have a diverse microbiome. And we know that the gut microbiome touches every part of our body and is so important to lowering inflammation in the body.
Wow, that's amazing. 30 plants per week. I mean, I think I'm getting like 3 right now, so I feel like I need to really step it up.
You'd be surprised. This is actually a fun exercise. You know, just keep a phone note and jot down every time you have a different fruit or vegetable, grain, nut, seed, something along those lines. They add up fast.
Well, it's funny because, you know, this is something that I feel like I've learned so much from Gretchen, because I feel like you have such like a nuanced approach. Oh, no, I have a barking dog.
Puppy! We got to get the dog in here as part of the podcast.
Yes. I mean, I just love dachshunds more than any other dog. They're my favorite.
Hopefully he'll behave himself. I gave him something to chew
on. Tiven knows I'm here. I'm ready to see him.
I know. He's like, hello, hello.
So I will say that Gretchen provided, as her social media, I mean, I know we work together on it, but her message has provided so much healing for me, because I did not realize how much messaging was on social around this like lack mentality when it comes to what you're eating every day. And I had no idea the psychological ramifications that had on me until I started watching someone who was saying something like, what, you know, eat more, or this is the proper amount of food that you need every day in order to fuel your brain and your body and perform at work or be, you know, available to your family to have fun and enjoy life. And I realized that my brain was like, totally in this place where like everything I ate, it was like, is this the right thing I should be eating? Oh, I'm probably eating too much. Oh, I'm like hungry. I need to go back for seconds. Like that's not okay. Right. Like I should just sit here and just be a little bit hungry because I want to lose weight. And I didn't realize that I was having those thoughts like all the time, every single meal. And I can only imagine how much that's like weighs down on my ability to just enjoy life and relax.
And that's a stressor in itself, because if you're always like low level fight or flight about your food, you know, you're eating three times a day, you probably think about food more often than that. And like I said, you're in relationship with food. So it's kind of like being in an unsupportive relationship.
Totally. And I had no idea. My brain was just doing all this in the background until I kind of got exposed to a more positive way of thinking about food.
Well, and it's so hard when there's so much money to be made in the diet and fitness industry, where there's a lot of marketing where they're like, we have found the way, da, 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 da. And then a lot of it is contradictory, or some of it is just downright probably dangerous or unhealthy. And what I always appreciate, like you said, there's so much noise out there. And what I've always appreciated about Gretchen is sometimes they'll be like, so what are your thoughts on this thing? And she's always like, well, here's what the research says. And she she actually knows the scientific, like what is actually going on with some of these things, or where people might be being led astray with some of this messaging of, it's like, it's not that simple to just like cut out entire food groups in this way, or to, you know, crash diet in this specific way, that there's reasons why. If the goal is weight loss, right, it might be successful momentarily. But as she's talking about here, like, we're thinking about your gut, we're thinking about your adrenals. Like, if you look at the entire system, what is that one thing that you're doing there? Even if you're losing weight, what is it doing to the rest of your system? Which is interesting, because I think this gets into some of our questions that we wanted to ask you today, in terms of your emphasis on fat loss rather than weight loss. So we wanted you to speak to that for a second, of like why that's important, and like other factors that you consider as, if someone comes to you wanting to lose weight, like what your thought is in terms of being this practitioner that wants optimal whole body health for them.
I'm so glad you're asking this question. Thank you. So first and foremost, I firmly believe that people should have choice when it comes to losing weight, and we can lose weight in a really supportive way if we're leading with self-compassion and trying to really understand how our unique body works. And we have to figure out how our body works in many ways in order, before we start going through some sort of program to lose weight. I have many people that come to me complaining of gut symptoms, like IBS symptoms, you know, bloating, gas, diarrhea, constipation, you know, feeling very inflamed, or people who are dealing with autoimmune flares or something like that. And I think it's so important in these cases to take a gut first approach and really focus on healing the body first and supporting healing. And in order to do that, you need to provide nourishment. I don't believe in trying to support and improve someone's gut health while simultaneously trying to lose weight. There are some people where it will happen just as a result of eating better foods and overall reduction in sugar and processed stuff, and woo, yeah, you'll lose weight. But for some people, they'll stay about this, for many people, I should say, they'll stay about the same during this work, because we're really working on supporting, and there's a level of re-nourishment. I made that word up, but really re-nourishing the body that needs to happen at this point in the game, because people come in so depleted. And then once people are nourished, then we can start talking about losing weight. But I think it's very difficult to expect that, oh, I'm going to get rid of my IBS and I'm going to lose weight, or weight loss is going to be the key to solving my IBS problems. It just doesn't work that way. We get a lot of messaging in our world about how weight loss is like the golden problem solver, right? It's just like, if I lose weight, then everything's going to get fixed. And I don't think that's a smart way to look at it, because a lot of our chronic disease is actually exacerbated by times when we restrict for too long. And as women, we're very prone to over-restriction, especially if we're constantly trying to stay in our perfect favorite pair of jeans, or we're trying to live up to some sort of physical expectation that we feel is on us, maybe from family or social circles or whatever the case may be. So a lot of times we see a lot of depletion. And then Allison, like you said, we get into, you know, we have kids, right? So what depletes your body more than anything else? You know, creating some babies, man. And I've been there too. I've got two kids. And we see, it's so interesting. I'm very hopeful that 50 years from now, in the postpartum care model, we'll see micronutrient testing to see where different levels are. But you hear from women all the time that this is when autoimmune disease seems to kick in, or they develop IBS symptoms after they had kids. Or you go to the dentist and all of a sudden you've got 7 cavities and you haven't done anything differently when it comes to your dental health or sugar intake. So what's going on here? And it has a lot to do with nutrient depletion. So as we get closer, as we get further into the life cycle, really making sure we're not running dry when it comes to our nutrient stores is so important.
I wish I knew you in my 20s, because I cannot tell you the amount of doctors I went to try to solve gut issues and the number of 0 diagnoses that I have. I feel like I did every single test to try and figure out what was going on and like all these like random chronic symptoms, and no one could ever figure it out. It was just like racking up bills just to rack up bills. And I just wish I would have known someone like you to kind of help point me in the right direction. Honestly, it might have just all been stress. I'm willing to go out a limb and maybe say that. But I'm sure that there was also some like dietary components that I could have supported myself better with had I known you, Gretchen.
Well, I wish I would have known me too in my 20s. And I mean, my functional nutrition education was really spurred on by my own journey with IBS, which happened after I had my kids. I have hypothyroidism as well that developed after my kids, and it's the autoimmune kind called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And, you know, I have a slightly unusual presentation of it when it comes to the lab work. And it took me over 3 years to get somebody to agree to treat my hypothyroidism. And it took me a little bit longer than that to really get to the bottom of my IBS. And after I had a doctor tell me to just take a line, I knew I was just going to have to do my part and educate. And now I'm here and can share that information with other people, because I love gastroenterologists. They do a great job of diagnosing early really serious diseases like colon cancer. But when it comes to functional problems, they're not always equipped to support somebody in improving their gut microbiome and support actual digestion through food.
See, I feel like this is probably a very, very common experience, right? In terms of, especially like, first of all, the standard American diet is here to kill us all, right? I think there's, sorry, not to be dramatic, right? But there are some things, right, that, like you were saying, with the micronutrient depletion, not to mention like what's in processed foods, things that are probably, or actually we know are banned in Europe, right? Or we're allowed to give to our kids here. So I think there's just like, there's so much education, right, that has to happen, because you would assume just shopping through your typical supermarket that everything here is safe and fine and good for me to consume, right? And it's, I think, actually taking the time, right, to work with people and help them understand like what's going on within their body and how this stuff is interacting with them. I mean, knowledge is such power. Because again, I feel like even in terms of the motivation to make healthy choices, right? Because I think sometimes we don't really know what we're supposed to be eating, right? Like, to speak to what Aaron was saying, there's so much information out there that sometimes we don't know what we're supposed to be doing. Other times we do know like what we should be doing, but we're either not motivated about it, or there's still a part of ourselves that like isn't exactly sure why or what it's doing. Mm. So it's interesting. Even I've been working with Gretchen on the blood sugar piece, which we'll get to in a moment, in terms of like watching in real time how my blood sugar spikes and drops to various foods. And it's so interesting because Gretchen is always harping on that fiber. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it, I guess. But like, I didn't, like, I really didn't understand, right? Like some of the things that you were explaining, how in real time, right, it affects absorption and digestion. So I'm curious if you wanted to speak to that too, in terms of like the, what people might assume about, you know, balancing their blood sugar. Like they might think, oh, I just need to eat less sugar, right? Something like that, versus things that can be really helpful to people, or things that you focus on with people to get some of that kind of stuff under control.
So the thing I hear the most is like, I just need to cut out all the carbs for the rest of time. Amen. And that's really not sustainable. Carbs are sugar, I should say. So carbs are made up of sugar building blocks, and carbs break down into those sugar building blocks. And that is our number one source of fuel. You are genetically programmed to want to use sugar to fuel your cells and create energy. And there's nothing wrong with that. It gets a little bit messy, and we are become more prone to what's called insulin resistance, which I'll explain here in a second, when we're just constantly bombarding over time our body with high carbohydrate meals that don't have a lot of fiber, to your point, Allison, and don't have the right balance of other nutrients to go with the carbohydrate.
That's the thing that I need help with from you, even going forward, is like, you know, what do I eat and how do I combine things? Like, I think that's the thing that I'm sure a lot of people are wanting to ask, of like, how do I eat to support, you know, my metabolics?
Totally. So yeah. So I get a lot of people that are like, I just need to cut out all the carbs. Help me cut out all the carbs. And for most of us, because we run on carbohydrates, because they break down into sugar, and that's what we're genetically set up to use as our number one source of fuel. We can do that for a while. And we do see really, especially for people who are very insulin resistant, we do see very low carbohydrate diets. So think about a ketogenic diet or something along those lines work as far as helping to alleviate some of the symptoms associated with insulin resistance. However, it works until it doesn't. And I think it's really important that people learn how to, number one, how much carbohydrate you can tolerate along with the right amount of fat and protein, and what that looks like from a portion standpoint. This is why I love utilizing continuous glucose monitors, because it gives us such insight into your unique response to different kinds of carbohydrates and different combinations of foods. If you don't have access to that, that's still okay. Just kind of paying attention to how you feel after meals can go a long way. And then kind of figuring out the best way to cycle in those carbohydrates. If you look up carb cycling, there's a billion ways to do it. And, you know, for women, carb cycling along with, so you're adding more carbohydrates, for instance, during the luteal phase to support progesterone, is something that's been shown to be helpful. However, I think it needs to be more individualized just than slapping that label on it. And it really helps to think about combinations that make sense for you of different foods. The other thing I always like encouraging people to do, and this is generally pretty easy, is to make a point to eat a little bit more protein and vegetables before you start eating your carbohydrate. That will actually slow down the digestion of whatever carbohydrate you are eating. So it will create a slower drip of the sugar out into the bloodstream, which is really powerful in supporting insulin sensitivity.
See, that is so helpful. And again, it's so interesting to speak to the chronic fatigue thing, right? That I found that was a huge contributor to my fatigue, is having these, like, I need a nap after every meal. What's going on here, right? And to like have some of these tips, I think, are just so helpful. And having that like nourishment first approach, I think, is so beautiful, that, you know, that's something that you focus on. I think actually it's interesting. I, you know, have worked for a bit in one of Gretchen's programs called Rebirth. That is a kind of a long-term support group and nutrition program that helps people lose weight in a sustainable way, lose fat in a sustainable way. We should get to that in a moment. But I think it's really interesting that the kind of countercultural approach that you take in there, a lot of times people are like, oh, I got into a fat loss program. Let's go. Like, we're going to lose in the first month. And usually you're like, and now we're just like, we are working on getting your body so resourced, right, with all of the nutrients that you're not even talking about fat loss. And I think some people are kind of jarred by that. Like, wait, I got into this program. And you want to nourish my body first. But I think getting people to change the way they think about their body and how they're treating it and like their approach, right? Like you've said, to if fat loss is the goal, to doing it in a way that's actually making your body healthy and healthier and not actually depleting it just to get to an arbitrary number on a scale. Like, what are we doing here, guys? But like, can you speak to that a little bit too in terms of, again, the importance of focusing less maybe on a number on a scale in terms of the weight loss piece and more on like all of the maybe non-scale factors that go into what people are looking for when they're wanting to go on a fat loss journey or
absolutely a journey. This is one of my favorite subjects. So first and foremost, if you want to lose weight, your body must feel safe first. We need to build in safety. How often have you talk to friends or family, or maybe you've experienced this yourself where you're like, I've really cut back on what I'm eating, but I just can't seem to lose weight. One of two things is typically happening here. Either you're doing some extra eating of maybe more sugary things in addition to the meals, and that's adding up and you're not realizing it, or you are just so stressed out that your body goes into what I call starvation mode, where it's just holding on to everything. You're just like locked in because your body's like, the one thing I can do is make sure you don't starve. Because I always say we run on cavewoman or caveman software here. And this software does not know there's a grocery store that's not very far away from you. Just doesn't know that. So the one thing that your body can do to make sure you don't die is make sure you don't starve. So there's different mechanisms in place that kind of, for instance, when our cortisol is really high, a lot of times we'll see more belly fat appear. So our body does that on purpose. It's protective. You know, we're going to make sure you don't starve. So that's just an example. So I think it's so important before you go into a fat loss phase, especially when I talk to women, and this is the majority of women who I talk to, where they're just at their wit's end. They've been on Weight Watchers. They've done the South Beach diet. They've done every carbohydrate and calorie cutting diet, and with some success, but never been able to maintain weight loss. And that's because they never really stopped dieting. So usually they're very depleted coming into my programs. And I mean, nutritionally depleted, that's part of it. But they're also really depleted when it comes to having cultivated sustainable habits that they can practice consistently. So they're just like confused and kind of like, I don't even know what to do anymore. So we start slow with just building habits around, as I love to say, good fiber and protein. I always tell everyone a good rule is my 30-30 rule, at least 30 grams of protein at meals and at least 30 grams of fiber throughout the day. That's just a good guideline that is really applicable to most people, especially women in midlife. So I think it's really important to really build yourself up nutritionally and building up consistency with habits and then dropping into a fat loss phase. And it is true. If you do want to lose weight, you do want to manipulate calories in some way. The calories in needs to be less than calories out equation is true, but there's lots of modifiers off of that. That's how we need to respect it. Your body's got to be in the right place to be able to receive that and have you feel good in the process. Like, the key that nobody teaches is making sure you don't live in this fat loss phase forever. It's not like, oh, you get 29 points for the rest of your life and that's it. No, you need to cycle off of that. And I find sweet spot for women for being in a fat loss phase, and this is very dependent on how much you weigh, but let's just say somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 weeks is where you want to live. If you've been on a diet for 6 months, like, it's really time to reevaluate if this is really working for you and how you can really get back to a place of maintenance.
That's amazing. It's so interesting that you say that the body needs to be a state of like relaxation to release fat, because honestly, Allison and I recently just came back from Sedona, and one of the after effects of going to Sedona was fat loss. We both got on the scale and we're like, what trip do you go on? And you come back home like 5 pounds lighter and keep going. Like, we're just like going back and forth. Like, wait a minute, I'm still losing. What's going on? Like, just the idea of getting yourself into a place where you're like unstressed and unbothered in order to start from that place first before you go into something as probably a little bit stressful as weight loss is so smart. It's so easeful. It's that easeful up level that we always are talking about.
To speak to that too, in terms of what Aaron and I were up to is, you know, we had a kind of a wellness, I don't know, self-care retreat, right? This 3-day thing that felt like 10 years of healing in 3 days. I don't know. Yeah. It was just like really just truly one of those things where we felt a lot of kind of deep root stressors melting away. And so, and I think there is something to this, which is funny because it's built into one of Gretchen's programs, a resident mindset coach there, where we do kind of dig into like some of the ways that we are just like white knuckling our way through life and to find ways to release that. So like to speak to that sense of just whole body, whole mind safety, I think it really does all go together, right? In terms of your body being like, rest, digest, process, cleanse, like upgrade, like release, whatever it needs to do. But yeah, I'd love to hear you speak to that too, Gretchen.
I think that's so important. And this really goes beyond food. In our rebirth program, Allison is the therapist / life coach in our program. And you are such an important person in our program and an asset to the program, because we have a couple different things. We have our mindset office hours where Allison in a small group setting leads our participants through different meditations and discussions around self-esteem and body image in relationship to food and setting boundaries and things along those lines. Because why am I bothering with this? Why does a fat loss program do this? Because, yeah, getting the body to feel safe and having resources and practices to help you protect your peace is essential to being able to support your health. And I don't just mean losing weight. That's it's very helpful for that, but it's important for just protecting your health and stabilizing your health as well. We also, Allison, you have so many good modules in our program. One of my favorites is your time management module, which walks people through an exercise on how they might be kind of wasting time, because a lot of times we are doing things that aren't serving us or we don't even like doing, and we don't have to do them, but we're just on autopilot around them. And we could be, you know, doing things to support eating better during that time, or we could be taking a walk during that time. And this goes, like I said, like way beyond food. Obviously, we've got our stress management and our practices, our practical applications to lower stress. And going along with that is also movement and sleep. I can't say enough about that. If you're not getting enough sleep, you are going to eat more calories. It's somewhere right around 350, 400 calories is the estimation for getting less than 6 hours of sleep per night. So that's how many more calories you consume. And then movement, obviously fitting in movement is so important, but gaining strength in the process is longevity gold right here. So talking about that is so important.
So lift those weights.
Yeah, well, the time management piece I think is so interesting with some of the stuff, even in this ties into the theme of our podcast, right? Is this like utilizing radical self-care to get to the next level of whatever it is you're trying to get to, whether it's in business or relationships or a healthier body, right? This concept that radical self-care is like the gateway that like helps you kind of get in the door. And I feel like this is definitely true for me. And I think a lot of people would resonate with this. If I know when my life starts getting overscheduled and chaotic, that healthy meal prep, healthy cooking, like that stuff starts dropping off for me. Even like sitting down for regular meals drops off, and then I'm like grazing random stuff throughout the day. And it's, you know, it's like, it's just, it becomes this afterthought, which is so interesting because obviously eating is one of the most important things for our health and our well-being. We need to eat every day. And it's also interesting to me, even in terms of some priorities that I like every so often for us all to sit down and look at, like, how am I spending my time? So I actually love to cook. I actually love veggies. I love them. And yet those are the things that somehow drop off, right, when I'm too busy. And so it's interesting that not even making time for the things that I love to do in service to maybe other things, the busyness of the week or the day, of things that I don't even want to be doing. It's like, where are my priorities at? So I think it's interesting too of like the importance of food being this like really beautiful priority that you can also kind of have fun with and make it beautiful and healthy and communal, all of these like beautiful things at once, to kind of redefine what it means to, you know, eat healthy in an easeful way.
Yes.
Gretchen, there's two things that are kind of coming to mind right now as like something people might be experiencing as they try to, you know, nourish themselves differently. And the first one really actually happened to me the other day. It's like, as soon as you start to make changes in your diet, it seems like everyone starts to come after you and start noticing things. And they all have their little two cents to share with you. Like, maybe you need, like the other day, someone told me, maybe you actually do need to just be eating less in order to achieve your weight loss. And I'm like, no, I'm actually trying to sit here and think about how can I get more nutrients in my body? Like, how can I make sure that I'm eating enough protein in the morning so that I don't feel super hungry at 10 o'clock and reach for a granola bar with high sugar content? So like when people are chiming in with those kind of like moments and noticing what you're doing and might not be like what you want to hear, what is your advice for getting through that?
You know how people always tend to give relationship advice?
Yes.
It's the same with food. And it's complicated because, like I said in the beginning, we're all in this unique relationship with food. However, it looks different. And usually when somebody is commenting about somebody else's food, they're really projecting whatever's happening in their own relationship with food. So like the person that said to you, you know, maybe you really should just eat less. Maybe that's been their experience, that if they eat less and really just focus on that, that's been what's successful for them. Or like that's something they're struggling, that's a point of struggle in their personal relationship with food. I think it's always with food and with weight, because we're all in relationship with our bodies. We tend to just talk about weight a lot and like, I don't know, you know, body composition as like some sort of like benchmark, if you will, of physicality. And then we talk about food and this relationship to food, and everyone's got an opinion. And it's because we all have our own individual relationships, whether it's with our own body or with food. And I think it really boils down. I tell my clients all the time, you know what? You just remember, they're projecting their relationship onto your situation, and you don't have to absorb that. That may not be your truth, and that's okay.
For people who are like trying to go on vacation, what is your philosophy around eating on vacation? Like, that to me brings me a lot of anxiety sometimes. So the weather's getting warmer. So what is like your thoughts around like the vacation situation?
I'm going to answer your question with a question, Erin. What brings you the most anxiety about eating on vacation?
What brings me the most anxiety is the amount of like greasy, fatty foods that I know are going to be there, and maybe not having something healthy to reach for, because I know that my body feels totally horrible when I eat those things. And I just don't want to be going on vacation feeling like I have a stomach ache nonstop. And so that's what gives me the anxiety. It's like, is there going to be something around for me in order to eat that I'm going to feel good about? But I also think some of it too is like, you don't want to like stick out. So for me also, I tend to make different choices. And I don't want to be like the one person that's making everyone else feel bad about what they're eating. I just want people to enjoy themselves. And I love how this turned into a therapy session for me, Gretchen. So thank you so much.
Listen, it's never just about the food, right? It's so right. It's so complicated like, sometimes.
My people pleasing comes up. Let me self-diagnose. So yes, thank you.
No, this is very common. I heard you say lots of things kind of related to like, all I seem to find are greasy foods. Like I feel kind of out of control when it comes to what choices are even available to me. You also want mm-hmm. to prioritize feeling good in your body. Like you're on vacation. You don't want to be like having a stomach ache, right? On vacation. That's right. The worst. And or like having trouble in the bathroom. Like that's the worst.
Yeah. Hopping from bathroom to bathroom.
Yes.
Chugging Pepto-Bismol. Like I don't want to be doing that.
No one wants to go to the drugstore and like get, you know, digestive support, let's say, on vacation. And then the other thing I hear is, what about the others that I'm traveling with? And I think it's really important, especially if you're kind of a newbie at not just winging it on vacation, to set aside some time and actually plan what vacation is going to look like food-wise. And I think bringing snacks with you is always so important. So I have a few protein bars that I really like. So Aloha, like Hawaiian Hello. I'm not sponsored by them, but they are my favorite. I like them because they've got good fiber, good protein. And then I always like to bring nuts and jerky. And I'll tell you, my husband and I went on a trip to St. Thomas for my 40th birthday back in January, and he made fun of me. He always makes fun of me for bringing too many snacks, right? Well, let me tell you, too many snacks came in very handy when we were having trouble finding a grocery store the night we came in. And also when our flight was super, super delayed, we had all sorts of flight troubles coming out. We ate all of those snacks and I didn't feel terrible about my cobbled together meals. I knew I was at least getting fiber and protein.
Oh my gosh. That makes me so happy because everyone in my family is always cracking up because I am the snack queen. Like I will show up with all the snacks.
Yes. And you know what? And then people are like, oh, thank you so much. This happened and we needed like a snack meal or I needed a snack. Oh, you had one. Wonderful. And now I didn't have to go buy something super expensive or pick some suboptimal choice. I think what's also important is if you have, creating some control over at least some meals. So if you are even if you're staying, whether you're staying at like an Airbnb or a hotel, you know, most of the time you're going to have refrigerator access. And I love doing Instacart to wherever I'm staying so that I'm stocked for what I like to call food is medicine meals, the meals that really aren't like celebratory or whatever. So I wouldn't necessarily eat in my room, you know, the salad components that I got from Instacart for dinner, but creating breakfast salads, this is something I love to do when I'm traveling because a lot of times you'll have breakfast wherever you are. So I'll make a breakfast salad that'll have some sort of green. I love arugula because it's a cruciferous vegetable, really supportive for liver detoxification. Who doesn't need that on vacation? Then I'll throw in some berries with that. So we're going to get some really good fiber from the berries. I usually get some shredded chicken for good protein. And then I'll do some sort of – I usually don't buy avocados. Just this is a pro tip. Instacart will always bring you the hard avocados, the unripe ones. So I get like the guacamole cups and use that as a dressing on top. So you get a really nice balance of fat, fiber, and protein – and with lots of nutrients in that breakfast salad. So that's my travel pro tip, Instacart yourself some breakfast salad ingredients. And then when you plan to go out, I think it's always good to pinpoint a few places maybe where you can get more simple meals that make sense. And then, of course, have fun. So go get that burger and fries if that's, you know, what you want. Go get that, you know, breaded shrimp situation, the fried shrimp or whatever. Do it. Like have fun. You can make a lot of different things work. Don't be afraid to look outside the box when it comes to restaurants.
Loving this. So breakfast salad, pro tip number one, we'll have to get some sort of B-roll footage of your breakfast salad so we can all start making those. And I had no idea that arugula was a cruciferous vegetable. So That's pretty cool. I'm going to add that to my menu.
True story. True story. I do a lot of kale as well, just so you know.
And what is special about a cruciferous vegetable?
Cruciferous vegetables tend to be very rich in particular nutrients that have sulfur in them, which is really helpful. And you may notice that sometimes, but very helpful for liver detoxification. So they have certain nutrients that are very helpful for our phase one specifically of liver detoxification. So if you're looking to support estrogen levels, for instance, I always just recommend, let's make sure we're getting 5 servings of cruciferous veggies in at least throughout the course of the day. Bitter greens, so doing things like arugula is a great example, but also like dandelion greens and things like that. Also really great ways to stimulate bile and also support the liver.
That's amazing, especially if you're having a little, you know, a few little cocktails by the pool, you might need to up your cruciferous vegetables. So I love how you're positioning us for that. Vacation,
yes.
Happy hour.
So funny. I swear every time I sit down with Gretchen, it's like I learn, I don't know, 10 new things that are blowing my mind. She's like an encyclopedia of all the things. I think like knowledge is such power. And I think, again, to speak to our easeful up-leveling process of what makes things easeful, I think when you can make it interesting and fun and playful. Let me try this out. Let me make a breakfast salad. That sounds interesting. There's novelty here. There's something. Let's see if I like it. Who knew? Maybe I like salad for breakfast better than... It's so funny that I'm not a huge breakfast person either. I love eating lunch for breakfast or whatever. So whether it's a salad, whether it's salmon, I don't know. It's so funny that you like bring that up. And to speak to Aaron's perspective of the daring to be a little different. Aaron, you're not the only one from the people pleasing. Something came up for me too this weekend, which was actually really lovely. I have members of my family that try to be super supportive of my gluten-free lifestyle by buying me like so many sweet gluten-free things. Like I found this gluten-free cake and these gluten-free cookies. And so sometimes it's so interesting. Like sometimes there's people who are kind of negative in the way that they push you. And then other time I was like, oh, people are like showering me with their love language and sweet things. I'm like, that's nice. Like, yes, I can eat. I can technically eat it because of the lack of gluten, but am I wanting to eat that? No, I'm not. Right. And so it's, I think there's like something to this too of, finding like ways to really express your love and appreciation to people and still stick to your plan. I think is, you know, it's a challenge for some people. And I think it takes practice to find ways to do it tactfully and lovingly and supportingly to the people around you to be like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Maybe I'll save this for later.
Totally.
It kind of goes back to what you were saying before, Gretchen, which is like the start of our conversation, which is like, we are communal eaters. It's part of our community. It's part of our emotional connections. There's so many layers wrapped up in there.
So many layers. I do have a note on that though. One thing I always tell, because this happens all the time, especially when people find they have food sensitivity and there's pushback in some way from family members, or there's this very loving like, awesome, I bought you the gluten-free cake. I'm so excited. You know, I think it's always great when if you know there's a family member who's doing something so loving like that, you know, at some other time, this is always the best time to do it. Do this at a time that is not during the event or right before the event, but at a separate time, just be, pull them aside or send them a message. First of all, thanking them. I so appreciate you thinking of me and getting me this gluten-free cake. I'm also trying to be very conscious about my sugar intake. So as much as I appreciate you, you don't feel like you need to do this. Or could we get something that's smaller? Or, you know, I just want you to know you're so appreciated, but moving forward, I just won't be able to eat this all the time either. So don't feel like you need to just get it for me. Some language like that's so important. And I think what's more important than the language is just your timing. Make sure you're doing this like not around any event. So there won't be the issue where they already bought the thing and they're going to be annoyed. Or it's like during the event and they're going to feel called out. If you do it another time and just really shower them with your appreciation, usually it's like a non-issue.
I love this. Yeah. If there's like a moment where we've maybe had like a big weekend and we've had a lot of, you know, different choices. Like maybe we are coming off of one of those weekends where we celebrate and we eat the cake and we have the glass of wine. We don't eat according to our plan. What's your advice for us coming off of one of those weekends to get back on track?
Just get back to your healthy habits. And that really starts with your mindset. It's very tempting for a lot of people to, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes, go for it.
To get into what I call the fuck it mindset. So I'll talk about that here in a second. But usually what happens prior to that is people are like, oh my gosh, I was bad in quotes this weekend. So now I'm going to be so quotes good tomorrow and super restrict and only eat right protein and vegetables. That's all I'm allowed. Protein, veggies, and water. And usually that's not sustainable, or something comes up and it's just too strict. And then they break their rule, and then they just get super frustrated and go into what I call fuck it mode. And they're just like, I'm just going to tune out the world and what feels good and just celebrate until I feel really bad and then start this whole cycle again. So we can get away from that by not having that all or nothing mindset. And we can really like embrace the fact that we had an awesome time. I'm so grateful that I was able to have this amazing experience with my friends celebrating this weekend. I am allowed to enjoy myself with food. And I am also very capable of getting right back on it. That language that you have in your head, something like that, is so empowering. And it's going to make you want to get back to your core habits. Without drama.
I love, yeah, this is like, this is feeling so empowering. Like I'm like ready to take on the world just hearing you say that. And I think there's so much to it. I love that you're teaching us how to like nourish ourselves, how like the kitchen can actually be like our best friends when it comes to, you know, achieving our goals. And this all just feels so sustainable. And I just really, I'm interested in everything you're saying because number one, I know that what you're giving us are like super valuable tools and that there's like there are scientific studies behind everything you're saying, but also there's such a compassion and kindness that you're kind of bringing all this up with. It feels so healing to just like even head on, just be like, wow, these emotions are going to pop up for me. And I'm going to resource myself with the knowledge I need, not only to achieve my nourishment goals, but also to start helping to support my positive mindset around everything that's going to be coming at me.
I'm so glad you brought this up because it really speaks to how I view the role, my role in somebody's journey, somebody's fat loss journey, and or somebody's journey with nutrition in general. Dietitians get a really bad rap about being the food police and having really strict and stringent rules about food and things like that. And I don't think from the work that I do, which is of course more functional, preventive, I really don't think that that's the role that I play at all. I really like to think of myself as a navigator during this phase of somebody's health journey. So I'm like your Siri, right? Like you the client, you the person going through the journey, you're still driving the bus. You are driving the car and you get to decide ultimately, do you want to take the country roads or do you want to take the highway? And I will just have to redirect as necessary. So if you decide that you want to come off the highway and you want to take the country roads to get to, you know, Healthy Town USA, that's fine. Like we can totally do that. There does come a point sometimes where I'm constantly redirecting. We're not getting anywhere. We have to say, okay, pull over and let's talk about what your goals actually are. But at the end of the day, ladies, who's driving the car? It's you. And you should, because when you're driving the car, you're responsible for the decision making. You get to start really learning about yourself and really shifting. This is something that you see in the research around what helps to create a sustainable habit. Shift that power, that motivating force from something that's external, so like being part of a program, to something that is internally motivated. So that is, if I give you the power to drive the car, actually, I don't even give you that power. You just have that power because you're the one on the journey. Then if I let you keep that power, then I'm also not letting you do anything. I hate my language around this. If you're driving the car and you stay in the driver's seat and I'm just hopping in as the navigator, then you really have the chance to, utilize the external support and motivation as you need, and then slowly shift into a place where that motivation is coming from. Wow, I feel so much better when I eat this way. Wow, this is actually something I can do that feels, to use your words, easeful. Wow, I love doing this and I want to continue embodying this way of fueling myself. Woo-woo, then I need to exit the car. And ultimately, at our work in Rebirth, I really want, at the end of everyone's six-month journey, for them to feel really supported so that they can take the navigator out of the car and drive to Healthy Town USA on their own.
This is so beautiful because, there's just so much, I think, that comes down to these questions of control. Like, I know you're like, oh, I don't know how I feel about my language with some of the stuff, but control is such a core thing, I think, with a lot of food choices. Of sometimes it's overly controlling it, or for a lot of people, feeling out of control. And I love too that, like, you help people expand their mindsets and think of fun solutions. I've seen Gretchen help people, like, dress rehearse. Like, I'm going to this party and I already know there's going to be all sorts of things, right, that are going to tempt me off my path when this is really important to me. I don't actually want to use this night to imbibe and all of these things. I want to feel confident and feel good, and I want to know what the options are. And I just think it's so cool that you are, like you said, giving people or reminding people that they're driving the car. You've got this. I think there is something to just like feeling confident and proud in the choices that you're making, and knowing that most of the time you're making good ones, not that there has to be perfectionism to it. But I do think it's just such a liberating thing that I think goes always even beyond the food, even though that's your expertise. It does seem like everyone that I've talked to that has worked with you have had all of these other beautiful things that have blossomed in their life out of optimizing their health and their nutrition with
them. Oh, so thanks for sharing that, Allison. You know, that's always my whole reason for working in food as opposed to another, role in healthcare, is because I really feel like food is such a gateway, a really powerful gateway into the body and also the soul. We'll get a little woo-woo here. I know you ladies won't mind. But, like I said, our food is really tied in with our relationship. We're in relationship with food, and our relationship with food is oftentimes tied up in our relationship with our bodies and the relationship between brain and body, what kind of brings it all together. It's the soul, right? So the food can be such a powerful modulator here on a physiological level, but also on an emotional or spiritual level.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times people will talk about, as they become, like, their strength in their intuition, or even as they clean up their diet, their intuition gets strengthened. That can be a side effect people don't realize, but they start to be able to listen to their body better. They start to be able to, when they're meditating or praying or going through their day, they have these moments of intuition that come in stronger than they ever have before, as their body starts to work better and more efficiently. So I think that's a really important piece to it that people might not be expecting to find when they clean up their diet. They might just want to lose weight, but then they realize that there's all these other amazing possibilities on the other side. They're able to have more energy. They're able to think clearer. They're able to make decisions in their business quicker because they have less brain fog. I mean, they can show up for their commitments in a more energized and, I guess I would say, like, grounded fashion, because they're not on this like roller coaster of highs and lows that comes with the glucose spikes. So I think this is really neat that you've taken that into consideration as you are building the Rebirth program, that it's just so much more than what we're eating. There's so much that what we eat unlocks for us in the way of like the way we can show up and achieve.
Yes, yes.
And with that, I'm interested in your own entrepreneurship journey. You've built a highly successful business, and I know that you've been working on your own for many years after a very successful career in the medical system. And I'm so interested in, number one, what was the transition like from working in that like structured healthcare environment into your own business? And what have been your keys to longevity?
So let me share a little bit of how it all happened, and I'll definitely hit all of those points. So I've always been an outpatient dietitian. I've never wanted to be an inpatient dietitian. I've always really wanted to be in the preventive medicine space. And I worked for the Cleveland Clinic for a handful of years, mostly in bariatrics, which was an incredible experience. I got to see so many different patients. I saw a lot of patients. I saw about 10 to 12 patients a day in bariatrics. It was a very busy clinic. And I also was part of a really cool multidisciplinary team. So we had the surgeon, and then the medical doctor, the psychologist, and the dietitian. And we would all come together and discuss cases and make plans as a team for different patients. And I really loved that model. And that was one of my favorite things that I learned working at the Cleveland Clinic, which was incredible. I also had got to have experience in other areas as well, oncology and gastroenterology, which just I got such a great experience. I really wanted to go part-time after I had my first baby, and that was not an option that was given to me. So when before I went on maternity leave, I had asked if I could go part-time, and they said, "We'll have to get back to you." And then they got back to me right when I was supposed to return, and they're like, "Nope." So at that point, I actually put in my 2 weeks notice because I was only equipped to have a babysitter part-time. And that was that. So I stayed at home for a couple extra months and actually worked. This is a fun fact. I worked for free for those 2 weeks because they calculated my maternity leave wrong financially. And they told me that if I didn't pay it back, I would be blacklisted from the clinic. Oh, so
the joys of employment. I felt very
unsupported as a new mom in this system in general.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I have chill. Wow. I mean, first of all, I want to acknowledge how you you followed your intuition, knowing that you would not be able to be the mother that you wanted to be in the old system. And so I love how you had that foresight to be like, hey, this is what I need, and this is what I'm going to stick to it for hell or high water. This is what I need. And if I can't get it, then I'm going to stay true to myself and just figure out a different situation. That takes a lot of courage, Gretchen.
I'm also very blessed. Like, we were able to have our, you know, have our family just on a single income with my husband through my husband's job. And not everybody is in those shoes. And I just want to take a moment and acknowledge my privilege there. So lucky to be in that situation financially. And it was interesting because both my husband and my mother were stay-at-home moms. And I just sort of assumed, like, you know, when you see that's modeled for you, you're like, oh, of course I'm going to love that. It's going to be great. And it frankly made me very depressed. I felt very isolated. I felt really like, even though I had people and I had like baby support groups that I was going to, I just felt like I was not fulfilling my purpose entirely. So about when my oldest was about 6 or 7 months old, I went back to work at a different hospital system, and I was working very part-time, so 12 hours a week. And it was actually during this time where I – actually, not yet, but later on into my time there, I developed IBS, and I was having really debilitating constipation, and that was probably a lot related to my thyroid, but it wasn't, according to several doctors, I went to bad enough to treat. So at that point, I really started my functional nutrition journey because everything I knew to do wasn't helping me. And I really got into learning more about functional nutrition. And I was in endocrinology, one of the outpatient endocrinology clinics with university hospitals here in Cleveland. And it was really cool because endocrinology shared an office with rheumatology, so where autoimmune patients come through. So over time, you know, I just, once you learn functional nutrition, you can't turn a blind eye. So I just noticed how much overlap there was between gut problems and diabetes and gut problems and autoimmune. And I kept seeing more and more patients from rheumatology and got to explore more and more with my newfound functional nutrition knowledge that, you know, is really, I think actually it's been a great gift to have gone through that health journey myself. I don't like, there's not a protocol. I never want people to feel like, oh, Gretchen just does what she did for herself. It's not like that, but just like knowing how scary and frustrating it is to go through a chronic syndrome situation, it can be helpful to have stood in shoes similar to somebody else's. And then I was at University Hospitals for 2 years. And then when I came back from my second maternity leave with my youngest daughter, they told me that they had cut my time with patients down to 20 minutes for follow-ups, which by the time you get somebody in a door of a clinic and through check-in and wait and all that stuff, that means you usually have somewhere between like 7 and 15 minutes with somebody. So I just felt like I was not able to do my job. And at that point, I formed the functional kitchen and I said, when I replete my income, when I make the same amount that I'm making currently in my part-time job, I'll leave. And I did. So I was able to do that in 4 months. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. And it was funny because when I put in my notice, my manager was like, oh, I'm so glad you reached out because I have some really exciting news for you. And I said, oh, great. Well, you go first. And he said, we would like you to work more hours. And I said, oh, does this come with a pay increase? He said, oh, no, but we have more hours available for you. And I said, well, I'm here to put in my resignation. And, you know what, there's some things that hospital systems do so well, emergency rooms. You know, we can't just have an ICU on every corner. There's so many really important things that are done well in the hospital setting, but I think preventive care is not one of them. So I've been fortunate enough to start my own business. It used to be brick and mortar, and then COVID happened, and I've moved everything virtual and have a little team with two other dietitians. And I'm really proud to have built a business that not only is successful, but supports my lifestyle. I can go and volunteer for my kids' art classes, you know, a handful of times a year. I can go up and see them at school. If they forget something, it's very easy for me most of the time to run it up to school. So I feel like I can be both in my mom role and in my business role as well.
Well, yeah, and you'd support others too, to be able to have that with your team that you employ. I mean, it's like you keep giving back. The more and more that you are investing in your vision, the more that not only you are supported, but there's like that ripple effect that continues to support others.
Yes. Yep. That's the goal.
And I love that you, with this whole story, you never settled for the BS that was being offered to you. Whereas I think sometimes people think like they look around and they're like, I don't know what other options I have. I guess I just have to accept this. And like, I think there is something when in your gut, you're like, I hate this. This is terrible. To have the wherewithal of, let me see if I can do this, right? Let me see if I can replace my income. You and I have very similar stories. You know, I started my business when my first kiddo was 18 months and then really went hardcore into it when my second kiddo was like 3 months because I was like, this is not working for me. I need to find another way. And I couldn't find any jobs that could do it. So I was like, I guess I'll make my own. And I think there's something really cool for other people considering that path to see other people who've done it successfully, because it can be kind of scary at times, or like you're bushwhacking into the wilderness and you don't know exactly how it's going to go, what you're going to create. But I find you to be a very inspirational businesswoman that I look up to as well. So I think it's just really cool to see other women succeed in creating their kind of optimal job and purpose and help people at kind of the level of their highest genius in the way that makes the most sense. So it's just amazing to see another woman.
Well, right back at both of you. And I'm just curious, I'm going to share that I think my favorite part of entrepreneurship, not only is it's definitely, okay, I have two favorite parts, is showing up and serving people in the way that I feel is most supportive to themselves and me. Because if I'm serving somebody but just depleting myself, like I'm going to be out of the game pretty soon. I can't pour from an empty cup. It's so true. So I feel like in this scenario, I can serve people to the best of my ability while supporting myself as well, so that the cup can keep given. But the other thing I just love about entrepreneurship is the creativity to try new things. And I'm curious if you agree with that statement.
Oh, I totally agree. Like this morning, I just came up with a whole new program that I'm so excited about doing. And like, I'm going to launch it soon, like whenever I want to launch it, right? But it's kind of interesting to be in that position where you have no red tape. And really the biggest thing in your way is like you and whether or not you choose to pursue that idea. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested, Gretchen, how much, like, how do you know when it's time to make changes or when it's time to start a new program or when it's time to offer something different? What does that decision-making process look like for you?
Well, I don't think it's not like there's a bell that's ringing that's a sure thing. I think it's a lot about trusting your intuition or trusting your gut, as I like to say, pun intended. Mm-hmm. And just going with it, I find that when I try something new, I'm like all in. And then as soon as I put it out there, I'm scared. I'm really scared. And then I start second guessing, was this a good idea? Was this not a good idea? And I've done this enough times to know this whole dance that goes on in my head. And then I just need to sit back and just stay true to the vision and see what happens. And sometimes it doesn't work out. Totally true. Yeah. It's not like all the time it's like a million people buy, woo, or a million people sign up for something. And I've had lots of master classes. I thought one on understanding emotional eating, I thought this was an amazing topic, and we did not get very many people who were very found it to be as amazing as I did. But you know, there are other times when, like our rebirth program, it's been through a couple iterations now of what it looks like. And I love, it's like a little kid. I love watching the whole different aspects of the business grow. And I think you just need to stay finger on the pulse and trust that even if it doesn't pan out from a metrics perspective, you're learning along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really
And there's always another option too. I mean, I think that's the beauty is like there's every, you can go in any direction with all these things. And one of my favorite parts of entrepreneurship isn't just like that I can choose anything. It's that I have the freedom to not choose things. And I love that. You know, there's in terms of working for other people, sometimes the way in which you have to work with clients or the specific types of clients that you need to work with, or there's various things or the way that you need to put your hours, there's all of these things that you don't have the opportunity to opt out of. And I think there's some things too with entrepreneurship of what you opt out of can sometimes be almost as important as what you opt into to make sure that you do have, like you said, that full cup energy that you can pour into, you know, or even have the time and space to regulate your nervous system as you're doing that thing that scares you, that you know is important, and that you know if I just kind of hang on with this and keep on trying, that it's going to work out. But that takes, I think, some resourcefulness as well. So I think that's the beauty of this journey that all three of us are on, navigating entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I love also in this online era, like your community can be as large and as global as you want it to be. So your coworkers are not just the people that you show up to work and maybe it's like the 5 to 10 people you see every single day. Your coworkers are endless, like you get to choose who they are. And I just love that there's that expansiveness to it and that like the next opportunity is always around the corner and you get to follow your passions and meet amazing people all day. And there's no cap to the number of people that you get to enjoy and learn from in this type of an environment.
So true, Erin. Well said.
Well, thank you so much, Gretchen. Well, if someone is inspired by everything you just said, what are their options for working with you?
Absolutely. So first, you can follow me on Instagram at Functional Kitchen Nutrition. You can also follow me on Facebook at The Functional Kitchen. I also have a website, which is functionalkitchennutrition.com. And I work with people individually through our program if you have IBS. So we have a 4-month one-on-one program for people who have IBS to improve your symptoms. And then we also have, as we've talked about several times throughout this episode, our 6-month Rebirth program, which is a fat loss program for women. We are also in the middle of rolling out some exciting master classes, which are free for a period of time. So if you join, if you hop on over to any of the channels I mentioned, get on my email list, you'll definitely be notified about any of these things. And then we also have some other programs that are going to be rolling out here soon as well. So if you're not interested in 6 months and maybe 6 weeks, a taste of what Rebirth is like is something you're intrigued by, come on over and I'll have the information.
Yay, so exciting. Well, thank you so much, Gretchen. This was amazing. I appreciate the free therapy that you just gave me around eating. I appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge around nutrition and what it can do for us when we listen to our bodies. And thank you so much for your expertise. And we'll have to have you back at some point. But in the meantime, everyone, follow Gretchen for some amazing positivity on your social media feed and maybe engage with one of her programs or masterclasses.
Oh, ladies, I'm so grateful to know you both. Thank you so much for having me on the Easeful Up Level. And I love you so much.
Oh, lots of love to you.
I love you.